Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, spicy with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And ladies and gentlemen, we are here at UFC 318 Fight Weekend. That's all we got on the table for you guys today. We're also going to talk about the updated UFC rankings, but this is the retirement fight of Dustin Poirier. This ain't no Lord Murphy, Carlos Esparza, Chris Weidman retirement fight. No. No. Let's say this is bigger than Bill Goldberg, too, might I add, in the WWE terms. Dustin Poirier, his final ride against Max Holloway this Saturday for the BMF Championship. And all signs point towards a Dustin Poirier win, but we've seen Max Holloway break streaks before. So I'm very excited for this. There's a lot of fights to cover on this card. A lot of good ones, too. So we're going to go through the entire card, drop our predictions. And by the way, we're 184-92 on the year. We are 8 away from being plus 100 on predictions. We went 9-3 last week. Let's make it even better this week. But let's not waste any time. Let's get right on into it. And we have no new UFC fights to discuss. You know, that's how we open almost every single episode of the podcast. But we do have some updated rankings. So I figured we'd check them out right after UFC Nashville. We have had some updates to the rankings. So first up, women's bantamweight, no changes, but we do have that big matchup between Raquel Pennant and Norma Dumont, the rumored matchup between Kayla Harrison and Amanda Nunes, and I think a looming matchup between Juliana Pena and Ketlin Vieira. Now, moving to women's flyweight, Eduardo Mora gets a ranking after her win against Lauren Murphy. She is now ranked at number 15. I don't even know who they booted from the rankings, but they booted someone. Now that I am looking at this, I actually have no idea, because JJ Aldrich was ranked 15 when Kong was 4. Ooh, I don't know. They took out whoever was at number 10, and I know for a fact it was not. Did Tracy Cortez just beat someone? Who did Tracy Cortez just beat? I'm actually trying to think. It might have been whoever Tracy Cortez just beat as of late. Was it Amanda Hibas? I think they took Amanda. Vivian Arujo. She retired. Vivian Arujo either was retired or was cut from the promotion. So she's gone. I'm remembering now. Eduard Mora had a 15, JJ Aldrich at 14, Wang Kong 13, Case O'Neil 12, Karine Silva 11, and Miranda Maverick at 10. Interesting stuff there. Good for Eduardo Mora. You know, she is now sitting with a 12-1 record in her MMA career. And as far as finishes go, 9 of her 12 wins have came by finish, 7 of those in the first round. So I think big things ahead for Eduardo Mora, especially taking a name like Lauren Murphy on your record. That is a start, you could say. No changes in the women's strawweight division, as we still await to see if Zhang Weili is going to be taking on Valentina Shevchenko. I, to be honest, don't know. I really don't know. I could see her taking on Valentina Shevchenko later in the year. I've been a big advocate that that should be the co-main event on an Amanda Nunes and, Amanda Nunes and Kayla Harrison card. I think that would be a phenomenal, phenomenal co-main event. But, other than that, I don't even know of any big fights that they've got brewing. You know, Tatiana Suarez just waiting in the wings following her loss to Zhang Weili. Women's strawweight division has nothing going on. Women's pound for pound, similar stuff, nothing there. Men's heavyweight division, Tyson Teixeira drops one spot from 13 to 14 as Martin Boudet is up to 14. Interestingly enough, Walter Walker recently said following his win over Kedi Enchukwu that he doesn't want to be ranked for another 6 months and said he wants to fight undefeated prospect Mario Pinto in his next contest or any other unranked guys. I really like that from Walter Walker. Now, I can't lie, Walter, I would pick you to beat maybe the bottom 10 guys in the top 15, especially with his grappling abilities. I mean, like he said, the top of the heavyweight division is so tough. It's really true. It's really true. I mean, Tom Aspinall, Ciryl Gane, Alexander Volkov, Sergey Pavlovich, Chris Blades, and Holmana, your top six or top five plus the champion, on a different level. You know, Waldo Cortez Acosta, Marcin Tybura, Sergey Spivak, Derek Lewis is kind of a special case. Derek Lewis can be anyone any day of the week, but when we get into the bottom five of the top 15, it's pretty weak. So I like what Walter Walker is looking to do, and him versus Mario Pinto, I say run that fight. Light heavyweight, no changes there in the rankings. Next big matchup is rumored to be Alex Pereira versus Magomed Ankalaev. Later in the year, also have Jiří Procházka versus Carlos Ulbrich is rumored for that Perth, Australia card. Man, good stuff there. But then the next big fight we do have confirmed, Johnny Walker and Zhang Mingyang in Shanghai, China. Middleweight division, no changes. But you have Marvin Vettori and Brendan Allen fighting this weekend, which is going to be a big matchup. Kyle Brawler and Nazanimov off going down in Paris. Hamza Chimaev versus DDP at UFC 319. And Robert Whittaker versus Paulo Costa. Not Paulo Costa. What's his face? Robert Whittaker versus Rainer Day Ritter. Oh, Paulo Costa fights Roman Kapil this weekend, too. Middleweight division is a bustling. The welterweight division has some updates as, unfortunately, Wonderboy Thompson is no longer in the rankings. Gabriel Bonfim debuts at 14. Kevin Holland moves up to 13. Carl Sprott is up to 12. And Joaquin Buckley drops down to 8 because he was tied, I think, with Michael Morales or something. I don't know, but sucks for Wonderboy. I mean, I don't know what to do. You know, he expressed interest in fighting on that July 4th UFC White House card in a year, and I think that's where he should have his retirement fight because it ain't going to get easier from here. But Bonfim in at 14. It's tough to say where I want him to fight next. You could give him the loser of Jeff Neal and Carlos Prates. You could give him maybe even Joaquin Buckley, dare I say. You could give him MVP. I don't know. I'm just very curious to see how he does once he continues to progress in the rankings. No changes at lightweight, but we do have that big main event at UFC 318, which we will be discussing. Featherweight is where you have a lot of interesting movements going at it right now. Now, for starters, Mosfar Evlov is out of his fight against Aaron Pico. This dude has pulled out more times than any fighter. He has more pullouts than he has fights. And he has never had two consecutive fights without a pullout in between. Now, be it sometimes it's him, sometimes it's someone else, but he pulled out of his fight against Aaron Pico, and he's fallen into the Armin Tsarukyan trap. You know, Armin Tsarukyan is deserving. He's the number one guy. He's the number one contender, but he keeps pulling out of fights, and that's what's going to happen to Mosfar Evlov. So Mosfar, an absolute bum, is probably going to get lapped by the Diego Lopez versus Gene Silva winner. I'm being completely honest. But yes, Bryce Mitchell is now tied at 15 with Calvin Kattar. You know, they didn't want to boot Calvin Kattar out of the rankings, so they instead decided to tie him with Bryce Mitchell. And by the way, Steve Garcia debuts at 11, which means you technically have 16 people in the rankings at featherweight. I'm actually so perplexed by that. But also, Max Holloway was booted from the rankings. Makes sense. He said he's never returning to featherweight. So you now have Mosfar Evlov 1, Diego Lopez 2, Yair at 3, Arnold Allen and Brad Ortega tied at 4, Leon Murphy 6, Aljo 7, Emmett 8, Zalal. Yusuf Zalal is now ranked number 9, which is absolutely crazy, being that his win over Calvin Kattar is nowhere near as impressive as Steve Garcia's. Gene Silva 10, Dan Ige 11, tied with Steve, David Onama at 13, Giga Chikadze at 14, and of course, Kattar and Brett Mitchell tied at 15. I mean, there's just so much to start out, but since Steve Garcia is ranked at number 11, him versus Yusuf Zalal, Apex main event, I think that's a good fight. Bantamweight, no changes. Merab is rumored to be taking on Corey Sanhagen later in the year. Other than that, nothing too much. Flyweight, nothing there. And then the men's pound-for-pound rankings, Alexander Pinto is now tied at number 4 with Driscus Duplessis. I absolutely love that. I think that's the right call for the pound-for-pound rankings, even the rankings in general. But that's all we got for the updated UFC rankings. We'll be revisiting the rankings here in a bit when we begin to go over all 14 freaking fights on this card. Are you kidding me? They decided to load this card up in Louisiana. We actually have Louisiana fighters for once. So excited for this, guys. Let's dive right into our UFC 318 preview and predictions. Kicking off this pay-per-view, which a lot of people are sleeping on, you know, I get it that this isn't UFC 317, UFC 319 quality, but it is still, you know what, we're going to run with it. Am I going to pay for it? Absolutely not. I don't even know if I'm going to watch it. I may be busy, but we're going to try. You're most definitely going to watch Justin Poirier versus Max Holloway somehow. But women's flyweight action kicks off the card as Carly Crispy Judice is back to take on Nicole Calieri. Carly, 4-2. Nicole, 8-3. 5'7 to 5'3, 4 inches in height for Carly Judice. And she has 6 inches in reach, 68 inches to 62. Southpaw stands for Carly, Orthodox for Nicole Calieri. And Carly's coming in minus 260 as the favorite. Nicole Calieri, the plus 215 underdog. Let's start right out with Carly Judice. Carly Judice coming in 26 years old from Lafayette, Louisiana. All 4 of her wins have came by knockout, and they've all came in round number 1. Now, she's currently 1-1 in the UFC. Of course, lost on Damas Quintero series by split decision to Ernesta Karakayak, and then debuted June 15th, 2024, losing a split decision to Gabriela Fernandez, which a lot of people thought she won. Now, Gabriela Fernandez is very notable for having upset Carly Judaize, and also having upset Wang Kong. The Wang Kong won much bigger, but Carly Judaize was able to follow it up with a win in March, a minute 40 head kick of Eunice Du Ben. She's a killer. She's a killer. I do not think that we should hold her accountable for having two split decision losses. She seems much better than her 4-2 record, and she seems like a little kickboxing badass, if I'm being honest. So, looking to take that momentum into her home country, her home state, I should say, as she takes on Nicole Cagliari. Now, Nicole, 28 years old, is from Paraná, Brazil, and of her 8 wins, 8 finishes, 5 KOs, and 3 submissions. And of her 3 defeats, she's only ever been submitted once. She did lose her UFC debut to none other than Ernesta Karakaye. So I guess Ernesta has beaten both these women, which means you would think she'd be better than both these ladies, but she's actually not. She's actually 1-1 as well in the UFC, but that was back in January, first card of the year, a split decision, might I add. She did win by armbar on De Wescatera series last September, so I do think this should be a competitive matchup, but no need to sugarcoat it. Carly Judaize, round one finish in her home state of Louisiana. I'm loving all the Louisiana fighters on this card, if I'm being honest, and I think Carly is just the start of the card. And we've been on fire with finishes as of late on UFC events, so I think Carly Judaize gets us going. Next up, you already know this fight is not going the distance. Middleweight division, Bruno the Hulk Ferreira takes on the debuting Jackson the Moose McVay. Happy that Jackson's actually able to fight. For once. I mean, this dude had multiple fights at UFC 317. Everyone kept pulling out. But Bruno Ferreira, 13-2. Jackson McVay, 6-0. 6'4 to 5'10. 6 inches in height for Jackson McVay. Oh my. 5 inches in reach as well. 77 to 72. Southpaw with that left for McVay. Orthodox with that right for Bruno Ferreira. We already know Bruno is an absolute dog. We've done known about Bruno Ferreira, and that's why he's the minus 645 favorite. Insane. But I do like Jackson McVay at plus 450. That is a good underdog cash right there. Bruno Ferreira, 32 years old, also from Paraná, Brazil. Him and Nicole Cagliari. He might be hanging out in the city. Who knows? 9 KOs and 4 subs give him a 100% finish rate. And might I just add this to you right now, Jackson McVay also has 100% finish rate, which means the first 4 fighters on UFC 318 have a 100% finish rate. That's what we love to see. Bruno, both of his losses have come by finish, and you know, it's been a pretty hectic run in the UFC so far. He was originally supposed to fight Ikram Alkhasserov on this card. Ikram pulled out. I think that was the best thing that could happen to him. With a 4-2 record in the UFC, he has knockout wins over Gregory Rodriguez, Phil Hawes, Dustin Stolfus, and a submission of Armin Trojan, which he got back at UFC 313 in March. His losses, minute and 17 knockout to Nursultan Ruzaboyev 2 years ago, and in October got submitted by Abus Magomedov. So dude's only been fighting dogs since he came into the company, and you know, we are aware of how good Bruno Ferreira is, especially him showing the armbar last time out in March using the grappling against a great kickboxer and Armin Petrosian, show that there are levels to his game. So I'm very happy to see Bruno Ferreira getting another shot here, and I do think he'll get it done, because I mean, don't want to knock Jackson McVay here, but the 26-year-old from St. Louis, Missouri, with, I mind you, 3 KOs and 3 subs, is just green. He's great, and he does have a size advantage over Bruno, which I think could come into play, but Bruno is, you know, historically not really been fazed by that. He was actually supposed to fight, it was Cedric Dumas, then he was supposed to fight Chris Ewart. Chris Ewart missed weight by 10 pounds, Cedric Dumas pulled out, and yeah, Jackson McVay was like, dude, I guess I'm not going to fight in the UFC, and they're like, you know what, we're going to find you an opponent. How would you like your third straight short notice matchup? And that's what he's going to do here. Last win was June 13th, was able to get a knockout there in round number one, so I'll be very excited to see Jackson McVay here, but not trying to disappoint anyone, Bruno Ferreira, round one knockout. I think Jackson might actually come out with a little bit of momentum, but once he tastes that fists of Bruno Ferreira, he's going to realize it is game over night. So Bruno Ferreira by round one knockout, I'm predicting that. I'm predicting 2 round one knockouts to get the night going. That's what I think is going to transpire. Moving up in weight to the men's heavyweight division. Men's heavyweight division, one of the weakest divisions. Honestly, can we say it? It's the weakest division in the company. It is the weakest division in the company. Might be a bit better than light heavyweight, but I'm going to say no. I'm going to say heavyweight's the worst division right now. Ryan Superman Spann takes on Lucas the Bull Brzezik. Ryan Spann, 22-11. Lucas, 9-6-1 with a no contest. 6'5 to 6'4, 1 inch in height for Ryan Spann as well, with 1 inch in reach. 79 to 78, orthodox stance for both of our fighters. Ryan Spann, minus 230. Lucas, plus 190. Ryan Spann, coming into this one, 33 years old. old from Memphis, Tennessee, but now fights out of Texas. I believe he fights out of Fortis MMA, if I'm not mistaken. Six KOs and 13 subs give him 19 of his 22 wins by finish. And of his 11 losses, he's been finished 8 times, 5 by KO, 3 by sub. So he has an 8-6 record in the UFC, and as of late, 1-4. So, not too hot. But Ryan Spann came in super hot into the company, went 1-1 on Dana White's Contender Series, was actually finished in 15 seconds, and then got a 26-second finish. Crazy. Started out his run 4-0, but then ran to Johnny Walker, who he dropped 2 times in 2.5 minutes, and then got TKO'd, of course. Balls up, win over Misha Cirkunov, loss in a main event to Anthony Smith, then submits Ian Kutalaba, knocks out Dominic Reyes, then gets submitted by Nikita Krylov in a main event. Then loses an outrageously bad fight to Anthony Smith. Action-packed, but bad. Like, bad to the point where just like, how are these guys in the company? Bogdan Guskov would then knock him out, and he would pick up a win at UFC 307, submitting Ovin St. Preux in 95 seconds. But last time he fought in March, Waldo Cortez Acosta TKO'd him in round number 2. So he's looking to bounce back from that in his third fight at heavyweight when he takes on the bull, Lucas Braziak. Lucas Braziak, 33 years old, from Poland. Poland, if you will. Of his 9 wins, he has 7 by finish, 5 KOs, and 2 subs. And of his 6 defeats, he's been KO'd 4 times, all of those knockouts coming in round number 1. He has a very wonderful 1-5 record in the UFC. Wow. Crazy. Now, I will say he lost his debut by split decision to Martin Boudet in a fight he outstruck, but didn't outpower Martin Boudet. Then would lose to Carl Williams in a very boring fight in 2023, and then gain knocked out by Waldo Cortez Acosta in August of 2023. Mind you, that was still a light heavyweight. Then took on Walter Walker in April of 2024, who he beat. That is right, he somehow holds a win over Walter Walker. I have no idea how. He basically survived round 1 against Walter, and then was able to just boringly outstrike him on the feet. Came back in July of 2024 and didn't even last 4 minutes with Mick Parkin before getting TKO'd. And last time out in December, Kenny Ichikuchi knocked him out in round number 1. I don't think it's going to get better with Ryan Superman Spann. And to make matters even better, I think you get your third finish to start the card on UFC 318. Give me Ryan Spann by round 1 submission. I think he might even knock down Lucas, but I think Lucas holds in there, and you get a rear naked choke, guillotine, arm triangle from Ryan Spann. He really likes the crank on that guillotine, so it even could be a standing guillotine against Lucas Braziak. But I am going to go with Ryan Spann. We're rocking with the 3 favorites to start the card. Now, here's where things get tricky. There's a lot of fights on this card I'm very torn on. I'm happy there's not a lot that I am, because, you know, like, I can see Nicole Calary, Jackson McVay, and Lucas Braziak winning, but I am pretty confident on my first 3 predictions. Light heavyweight action next with Jimmy Crute and Marcin Pacheco has me torn. Jimmy Crute, 12-4 with 2 draws. What are the odds you get 2 draws in your MMA career, both of them in the UFC? Marcin, 17-8. 6'3-6'2, 1-inch in height for Marcin. Both men have the orthodox fighting position and a 74-inch reach. Jimmy Crute, minus 250. Marcin, plus 210. Jimmy Crute used to be in the rankings, was on the verge of main event status, and then just kind of ran into some issues. But the 29-year-old from Australia does have 9 of his 12 wins by finish, 5 KOs, and 4 subs. And all 4 of his defeats, he has been finished in. Now, mind you, he does have 2 draws. Pretty wild, if you ask me. I'm completely, you know, perplexed by that. Actually, I don't think he's been knocked out in all of his defeats. I think he's been submitted into and knocked out into. I think that's what's gone on with Jimmy Crute. But he does have a, you know, mediocre UFC record. I think he's sitting at 4-4 with 2 draws now, so this is going to be make or break for him. And I think he was supposed to fight Marcin Pacheco February 8th, but instead Rodolfo Bellotto stepped in. And then the rest is history. But, you know, Jimmy Crute is coming off a draw to Rodolfo Bellotto where he almost finished him in round 1, then lost the last 2, so surprisingly. But, I mean, the real downfall started in 2021. So, coming into this, 4-1 for Jimmy Crute. Only lost to Misha Cirkunov. All the others finishes, including a nasty knockout on Modestus Bukauskas. He would take on Anthony Smith at UFC 261 and would injure his leg in round 1, not allowing him to compete. Would come back at the end of 2021, get knocked out in under a minute by Jamahal Hill. Then would have a draw against Alonzo Menifield in a fight where he would basically get knocked down and then go and take down Alonzo Menifield. It was pretty comical. would rematch Alonso later in the year and get submitted in round number two. Would take 2 years off, came back at UFC 312, and of course, 10-8 in round one over Rodolfo Bellotto, drops the final two. So Jimmy Crute is really searching for meaning right now. Dude had so much potential. I actually think that Jamahal Hill fight was the co-main event, and I know he opened the main card for Usman Masvidal too. Now, it's on the prelims, searching for meaning as he takes on the Polish man, Marcin Prachinio, who actually trains out of the Netherlands now. Funny enough, he is elected to switch over to the Netherlands. Of his victories, 17, he has 11 knockouts and 1 submission. Of his 8 defeats, he has been finished 6 times, 4 of them by KO, 2 by submission. He has a very mediocre 4-6 record in the UFC, and he's just looking to bounce back. But mind you, debuted against Sam Alvey, then Magomed Ankalaev. You know, this was prime Sam Alvey finishing Magomed Ankalaev. Dude was a killer. Then lost to Mike Rodriguez. I have no idea who Mike Rodriguez is, but after defeating Marcin Prachinio, he would lose his last 3 fights in the UFC. I have no idea who that guy is. Then would beat Khalil Roundtree Jr., then finish Ike Villanueva, drop a decision to Felipe Lins, beat William Knight in one of the worst fights in UFC history, lose to Vitor Petrino. Last win was February 10th of the last year, 2024, against Devin Clark. Then fought at UFC 304 last year, where Modestus Bukakis submitted him. Now, Marcin Prachinio, let's not sugarcoat it. He is a kickboxer. He loves the leg kicks. He'll mix in a takedown when he has to, but really, he doesn't. He really doesn't. And hasn't gotten a finish in 4 years. He's probably going to be hunting for that, and I'm torn on this. I'm really torn on this because I know what Jimmy Crute's capable of, but I just feel like he just might be falling to this trap where he keeps on losing. But I'm going to look at the last 4 people that Jimmy Crute's fought. Rodolfo Bellotto, who, by the way, we just saw Rodolfo Bellotto fight Paul Craig, and that was an interesting fight. Do want to add that to the mix. But Alonzo Menifield, Jamahal Hill, Anthony Smith, he's been fighting some dogs. I think Jimmy Crute's going to come out with anger, with, you know, brutality. I could see a finish perhaps, but I'm just going to pick Jimmy Crute outright. I don't really want to get caught away with the finishes here, but honestly, I don't see us going the distance. I really don't. I do see Jimmy Crute getting a submission or knockout in any regard, but if there's going to be a way Marcin Prachinio wins, it's going to be with a leg kick, either stacking him up over 3 rounds or hitting him with a dirty body kick or dirty head kick. But I'm going to ride with Jimmy Crute. Loved him since he started. And hey, maybe he can make a quick turnaround and fight in Perth at the end of September. Dropping down to welterweight, you have Adam Fugit taking down Islam the Ripper Dulatov in our next contest. Actually, the final fight on the early prelims, if you will. Adam Fugit plus 430, Islam minus 625. We got a big favorite here in Islam Dulatov. Adam is 10-4. Islam is 11-1. 6'3 to 6'1. 2 inches in height for Islam. 2 inches in reach go to Adam Fugit, 77-75. Southpaw stance for Adam, orthodox for Islam Dulatov. We'll start with Adam Fugit, the big underdog here. Adam is 36 years old from Oregon. Of his victories, he has 8 finishes, 5 KOs, and 3 subs, so 80% finish rate, not too shabby. Of his 4 defeats, he has been finished 75% of the time, 3 times. Yeah, not too pretty. He was actually supposed to fight in Seattle. These two were, and instead, that just never transpired. But Adam Fugit, sitting with a 2-2 UFC record, knockout losses to Michael Morales and Mike Mallett. Last win was against Josh Quinlan in June of 2024. So yeah, Adam, pretty regular UFC fighter, if I'm being honest. And he's taking on a guy in Islam Dulatov, who has a lot of hype, one could say. 26 years old from Germany, but was born in Russia. 11 fight Wayne Chick. That's right. He lost his first ever professional fight by decision and then said, what am I doing? And then decided to literally go out and just finish everyone else. 6 KOs, 5 subs, 100% finish rate. He's actually the number 4 pound for pound fighter in Germany right now. About to be removed from those rankings as he enters the UFC's rankings in the coming days. But yeah. Yeah, not the official rankings, but like their, you know, Tapeology rankings. Islam Dulatov by any way he wants. Islam Dulatov by just massacre. He got a win on Damas Contreras series in 2 minutes 44 seconds with a nasty elbow knockout, and I think he's going to do dirty things to Adam Fugit. We'll say round 2 knockout for Islam Dulatov, borderline round 1. As I look at this, I don't think a single early prelim is going to go the distance. It's going to be an out war. All out war. I'm excited for it. Getting into our regular prelims, which I believe you're going to be able to watch on ESPN, the regular channel. Back in the middleweight division, as Ateba the Silent Assassin Gaudier is back against Robert Robzilla. Valentine. Taba Gaudier, 7-1. Robert, 11-5 with a no contest. 2 inches in height for Taba, 6'4 to 6'2, and 4 inches in reach, 81 inches to 77. Switch stands for Taba, always switching up, and that orthodox stance for Robert Valentine does not change. Minus 550 for Gaudier, another massive favorite on this card. Robert's coming in at plus 420. Taba Gaudier is only 23 years old from Cameroon, currently riding a 6-fight winning streak, which I believe might actually be 7 or something. I think he might be on a 7-fight winning streak. I don't know, but all of his wins have came by knockout, 5 of which have came in round number 1. And his last 6 wins in a row have came by knockout. Damas Quintero series last year, got a round 2 knockout, debuted in March of this year, and got a nasty finish of Jose Daniel Medina. Was toying with Medina. Toying with him. Like, and that was a clip right there as Medina was getting just battered on by a table on the cage. Tells the table to bring it, and the table just lands a nasty knee and knocks him out. Oh, man, it was so dirty. Taba Gaudier, one of the rising prospects in the middleweight division. Only 23. This is a big fight for him as he fights Robert Valentine. Robert Valentine, the plus 420 underdog, is 30 years old from Switzerland. He has 9 finishes in his career, 3 KOs and 6 subs. And of his 5 defeats, he has been finished 3 times. Now, he is coming on over from the Ultimate Fighter, if you will. He had 2 round 1 finishes on there, including a 20-second knockout. But when he fought Ryan Loader in the Ultimate Fighter Championship, he was brutally finished in round number 2. Just taken down both rounds and just mauled with ground and pound. Then actually made his, I would call it his official debut, April of this year, when he took on Torres Finney Smith. I'm thinking of Dorian Finney Smith. I'm thinking of a freaking NBA player. But Torres Finney, one of the biggest meme fighters out there, who had 13 minutes and 16 seconds of control time, and this was somehow a split decision. Should not have been a split decision, but embarrassing effort from Torres Finney, but more embarrassing that Robert couldn't defend the takedown. So we've seen that as a big hole in his game plan. But here's a guy in the Taba Gaudier who is going to stand and bang with you, and he's going to stand and bang his way to a knockout. I got Taba Gaudier all day over Robert Valentine. This would be a huge upset in my mind. Now, I guess you could look at it as Robert Valentine is 30 years old. He has more experience, but I wouldn't call him too much more experience. You know, I wouldn't really say there's a big difference between 11-5 with a no contest for Robert Valentine and the 7-1 for Taba Gaudier coming over from Cameroon. So maybe he's the next Francis Ngannou. Maybe he's the prodigy of Francis Ngannou. I don't know, but we are definitely riding with a Taba Gaudier in this contest. Back up to the welterweight division as Francisco Prado takes on Nikolai Veretennikov. Francisco Prado, 12-3. Veretennikov, 12-6. 6'1 to 5'10 for Nikolai. You get 2 inches in height. And as for Francisco, he has a 5-inch reach deficit, 74-69 in favor of Nikolai. Orthodox stance for both of these fighters. Minus 145 for Francisco, plus 125 for Nikolai Veretennikov. The closest odds we've had on the cards so far. I swear, there's just so many big underdogs on this event. Francisco, 23 years old from Argentina, but now fights out of Miami, Florida. 6 KOs and 6 subs do give him a 100% finish rate, and of his 3 defeats, he has never been finished. Now, all 3 of his defeats have came in the UFC. This guy is somehow 1-3. I mean, lost to Jamie Mullarkey in 2023. That was bad. But then, knocks out Ottoman Azatir, has a fight of the night against Daniel Zaluber last year in February, and then fought this year in February, and just kind of got humbled by Jake Matthews. It didn't even make any sense, if I'm being honest, how he lost this contest. But I do see a lot of potential in Francisco Prado, and this is a good chance to get a win here as he takes on Nikolai Veretennikov. Nikolai, 35 years old from Kazakhstan, but now fights out of California. 12 years older. Wild. 10 of his 12 wins have came by finish, 9 KOs and 1 sub. And of his 6 defeats, he's been finished in 3 of them. Now, did lose on Damas Contender Series in 2021 to Michael Morales, but then was able to leave the UFC and then go on a little 3-fight winning streak. Would come back in August 2024, lose a split decision to Danny Barlow, then most recently fought in Seattle in February and got TKO'd by Austin Vanderford. This is honestly a 50-50 fight. in my opinion, and Nicola, you know, he's got the experience, he's been fighting maybe some tougher competition, but I can guarantee that Francisco Prado is going to bring it, and he's going to get this one done by decision. I could see this being the first decision of the night, I'm going to be honest. I think that maybe from here, you go on a little decision streak for the foreseeable future, but Francisco Prado over Nicola Verkhnyayev is where I'm sitting. Now, moving on up into our third regular prelim, if you will, Marvin, the Italian Dream Vittori, the number 10 middleweight on the planet, takes on the number 11 middleweight, Brendan All-In Allen. We got Brendan Allen on AEW, All-In. Well, how about that? Same nickname as... That would be like if someone's nickname, like Marvin WrestleMania Vittori. Imagine that. That's what that type of nickname is compared to AEW. I don't know. I'm going off a little tangent here. But Marvin Vittori, plus 185, is the underdog as he takes on the minus 230, Brendan Allen. Marvin is 19-8-1. Brendan is 24-7. Oh my gosh, so are these two 31 professional fights for Brendan Allen, and you have 28 for Marvin Vittori? Okay, so pretty close. 6'2 to 6', 2 inches in height for Brendan, 1 inch in reach for Brendan as well, 75-74, southpaw for Vittori, orthodox for B. Allen. Brendan Allen from Louisiana, believe it or not. Marvin Vittori, you already know this boy is from Italy, but now actually fights out of Las Vegas. 31 years old, he has 2 knockouts and 9 subs. Out of his 19 wins, he has 11 finishes. How? Marvin Vittori hasn't gotten a finish since 2020, for goodness sake. He's actually never been finished or dropped in his career out of those defeats, which I just find utterly insane. And these two were scheduled to fight in April of 2024. Marvin would end up pulling out, and Brendan Allen would have that banger fight against Chris Curtis. But Vittori, been with the UFC since 2016, believe it or not. He's fought Antonio Carlos Jr., Omario Akhmedov, Israel Adesanya, Jack Hermanson, Kevin Holland, Paulo Costa, Robert Whittaker, Roman Dolidze, Jerry Cannonier. This dude has fought a lot of tough guys. As of late, though, 1-3, 2-fight losing streak. Last win was over Roman Dolidze in March of 2023. Last time he fought in March of 2025, he lost a 5-round decision to Roman Dolidze and never woke up. But we know he has dog in him. You know, the Jared Cannonier fight, the Paulo Costa fight. We know Marvin can bring it out of him. I just don't know if he wants it. I don't know if Marvin Vittori really wants it. He has all the tools to be a good fighter. I just don't think he gets finishes, and that really hurts him. I think not having finishes hurts Marvin Vittori. And he's at a pivotal point in his UFC career, 2-4 in his last 6. I mean, and since 2021, you could even say, he has only had 6 fights. 6 fights in 4 years is not a lot. Dare I even go to 2023. Since 2023, he's only had 1 fight, and that was against Roman Dolidze, who he had already fought in before. So Marvin Vittori is really, really, really in need of a win here, but also is Brendan Allen. Brendan Allen, 29 years old, of course, from Louisiana. 19 of his 24 wins are by finish, 5 KOs, and 14 subs. He's a submission master, I'll tell you that. 3 of his 7 defeats have came by finish, and after losing a decision to Anthony Hernandez in February, a week later, he would lose a grappling matchup to Kyle Barala. So it's really a 3-fight losing streak for Brendan Allen. But I do want to say is that his last 2 defeats are to the number 9 and number 1 guys in the division. And who did he lose a grappling match to? The number 6 guy in the division. So Brendan Allen, we can kind of give a break. He's been with the company since 2019, and let me just tell you, this guy has done pretty dang good in the UFC, if I'm being honest. A 13-4 record, only defeats Sean Strickland, Chris Curtis, Nazdinyevov, and Anthony Hernandez. That's not too bad. He was once on that 8-fight winning streak. Actually, I think it was 7. Might have been a 7-5 winning streak, but win over Chris Curtis, submission over Sam Alvey, Christoph Schottko, Andre Munoz, Bruno Silva, Paul Craig, all by rear naked choke. Isn't that utterly insane? I think he has some of the he might have the most rear naked choke holds or even submissions in the middleweight division. He's up there. But Brendan Allen in the last 2, I mean, he was using the grappling against Nazdinyevov and was beat on the feet. Then against Anthony Hernandez, the grappling was used against him to defeat him, which was just pretty brutal. Now, I will say, Brendan Allen did go out and win round 1, but then kind of just lost everything in rounds 2 and 3. So I don't know which version of these fighters is going to show up. I don't know what to expect in this contest. You know, I've seen Marvin Vittori throw down, throw the strikey. I've also seen Brendan Allen, you know, get it done. I really want Marvin Vittori to win. I'm a big Marvin Vittori fan. But I can honestly, I don't know, guys. The more I actually think about it, I could see in the striking, I'm going to go with Marvin Vettori. Now, he does obviously a certain style of striking. I think Brandon Allen is more looking for a big power punch, and Vettori is looking more to just grind and pound on you. Now, as for takedowns, Marvin Vettori has good takedown defense. Brandon Allen has good takedowns. So we are fighting in Louisiana. I want Marvin Vettori to win, so we're going to use a little bit of reverse psychology. We're going to say the hometown boy, Brandon Allen, gets it done. I think this is going to be a high-level split decision. I think both guys are going to think they have won, and I don't know who's going to win that split decision. I'm going to say it goes to Brandon Allen because he's the hometown guy. I could also see it going to Vettori in the crowd booing. So we're going to go with Brandon Allen. I'll be happy if Vettori wins, but then if Brandon Allen wins, then I will have got my prediction right. I kind of feel the same about both these guys. I know Brandon Allen gets a lot of hate for being super cocky, but I'm honestly not too low on the guy. I'm pretty high on him. So going to ride with Brandon Allen in our second to last prelim. Now, getting into our featured prelim, men's bantamweight division. Little ranked action here is the number 15, Vinicius Oliveira takes on the number 12 ranked Kyler Phillips. This is an interesting matchup, too. Kyler the Matrix Phillips, 12-3. Vinicius Lockdog Oliveira, 22-3. Crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy that Oliveira is a year younger and has double the experience. 5'9 to 5'8, 1 inch in height for Oliveira, 2 inches in reach for Kyler Phillips, 72-70. Switch stance for Lockdog Orthodox for the Matrix, Kyler Phillips. Kyler coming in plus 155, Vinicius Oliveira minus 180. Ooh. Okay. Kyler, we'll talk about him first. 30 years old from Arizona. 7 of his 12 wins have came by finish. 5 KOs and 2 subs. And he's never been finished in all 3 of his defeats. He has a 6-2 record in the UFC. Now, as far as this record goes, I mean, it really, this dude comes in, wins on the first season of Dana White's Katara series, then doesn't debut for 3 years. Crazy enough. Finally debuts, fight of the night. Then round 2 finish. Then beats Sung Yedong. Then loses a fight of the night to Rolling Paiva in one of the worst judge decisions. Mind you, that was a Sanhagen Dillashaw card. It has 3 fights where the incorrect winner was called and all those. Actually, let me look at that real quick. I remember this card so much. Corey Sanhagen should have beaten TJ Dillashaw. Rolling Paiva should never have beaten Kyler Phillips. And Macy Barber should not have beaten Miranda Maverick. I remember that card. The judges were awful. But following that loss to Rolling Paiva, would go out, submit Marcelo Rojo, defeat Ryone Barcelos in 2023, defeat Pedro Munoz in 2024, and then lost to Rob Font in October of 2024. Was kind of humbled in that on the striking area. So Kyler Phillips is looking to get back in the win column as he takes on the newbie to the UFC, Vinicius Oliveira, but he has come into the UFC and just delivered over and over and over. 29 years old from Brazil, he's currently riding a 5-fight winning streak. 16 knockouts and 2 subs give him 18 of 22 wins by finish, and all 3 of his losses have came by knockout. Won on Damas Katara series with a round 1 knockout, then had a fight of the night and performance of the night, flying knee knockout, one of the best knockouts of 2024 against Bernardo Sopas. Whatever happened to Bernardo Sopas? Oh, he beat Ricky Turcios. Good stuff. Would then defeat Ricky Simone in June of 2024, and then most recently fought in Saudi Arabia and had a fight of the night against Saeed Nurmagomedov, who he knocked off. Yeah, Vinicius Oliveira is on a run right now. Kyler Phillips has just not really impressed me. He also hasn't been that active, so we are going to ride with Vinicius Oliveira, but this is very 50-50. Very 50-50. Kyler Phillips can really match the style of the person he's fighting. And what happened with Rob Font is he, for some reason, just did not feel like striking, decided to just lean completely on grappling, and it failed him. So if he does want to win, he'll have to strike with Vinicius Oliveira, but Vinicius hits hard. Vinicius also mixes in takedowns when you don't expect them. He's a dangerous fighter. So Vinicius Oliveira over Kyler Phillips, and this could be the best fight in terms of fight of the night on the prelims. But with that, let's dive right in into our main card. Kicking off the main card, I have no idea how this is on the main card. The UFC must know something we don't, because I could easily see Vettori and Allen being on the main card, 2 top 10 heavyweight middleweights. I could see Kyler Phillips and Vinicius Oliveira, 2 top 15 bantamweights, but no. Kicking off the main card, lightweight division, you have the legend Michael the Menace Johnson and Daniel Golden Boy Zaluber. I mean, how random How random is this? Michael Johnson, 24-19 professionally. Daniel Zaluber, 15-2. 6'1 to 5'10, 3 inches in height for Zaluber, 4 inches in reaches for him as well, 77 to 73. Yeah. Yeah, Zaluber is a minus 345 favorite. MJ's a plus 275 underdog. The UFC must know something we don't. They have to. They have to be making this fight and putting it on the main card. But kicking us off, Michael Johnson, 39 years old. Born in St. Louis, now fights out of Missouri, is a stunning 15-15 in the UFC. That's right. He came in 9-4 to the company and has since gone 15-15, which is crazy. Absolutely crazy. Now, of his 24 wins, 10 KOs, and 2 subs, of his 19 defeats, he's been finished 12 times, 3 by knockout and 9 by sub. Dude's been with the company for 15 years. Insane. Was the runner-up of the Ultimate Fighter, would then go here, there, sheer there in 2012, actually getting a win over Tony Ferguson. Oddly enough, also would pick up a win over Edson Barbosa in 2015, would lose to Benil Dariush and Nate Diaz before knocking out Dustin Poirier in 2016, would then lose to Khabib, Gaethje, Elkins, then would beat Andre Fili, Artem Lobov, would then go on a 4-fight losing streak, getting knocked out by Josh Emmett, losing a majority decision to Stevie Ray, getting ankle locked by Thiago Moises after beating him in round one, then losing a decision to Clay Guida. He would then knock out Alan Patrick, then lose a split decision fight of the night to Jamie Mullarkey. He would then beat Mark Diakise, then get knocked out by Diego Pereira, but then 2024 beats Darius Flowers and ends the year knocking out Ahmed Azatir in nasty fashion. Michael Johnson, you bloody legend. But I do want to say, for having a 15-15 record in the UFC, 15 losses is bad. He's 3-1 in his last 4 and 4-2 in his last 6. So I do want to say, since 2021, he has gone 4-2. Which isn't too bad, and hasn't lost since May of 2023. Michael the Menace Johnson, this could be his retirement fight. You never know. We're going to see. But he takes on the young up-and-coming Daniel Zaluber. 26 years old from Mexico, fights out of Extreme Couture now. I mean, oh my goodness, what a gym to train at. Sean Strickland, Chris Curtis, a lot of dogs there. 10 of his 15 wins by finish, 7 KOs and 3 subs. He's actually supposed to fight Alves Brenner and Austin Hubbard on the 29th in Mexico, but both of those guys pulled out, so he was unable to get a fight. His last fight was at the Sphere, at UFC 306 in September, where he lost a split decision fight of the night to Esteban Ribovic. Before that, he had won a fight of the night against Francisco Prado. Before that, he had finished Crystal Gallegos with an anaconda choke. Before that, beat Lando Venata, lost the decision to Trey Ogden, and won against Lucas Almeida on the Contender Series. So with a 3-2 record, Zaluber is looking to change his fortune. And as far as I'm concerned, this dude hits hard, this dude's a dog, and I think he's going to get this one done against Michael Johnson. Nothing against MJ, but Zaluber just appears to be on a different game. I accidentally highlighted MJ. We do this every time. No, we are not picking Michael Johnson. No, we're picking Daniel Zaluber. But I could easily see maybe an upset from Johnson here with a punch, but if anything, I think Zaluber's going to overwhelm him. So at this point in his career, 13 years, his senior, I think MJ is on his way out. Moving up to the men's featherweight division for our next contest, as the number 11 ranked featherweight welcomes back to another ranked opportunity, Patricio Pitbull, as Dan Ige is back in action. Dan 50K Ige, that's his nickname, takes on Patricio Pitbull Ferreira. Dan Ige, 19-9, Pitbull 36-8. Holy cow. 5'7" to 5'6". These are some shorter boys. 1 inch in height for Ige. 4 inches in reach as well. 71-67. Orthodox stance for both of these fighters. Pitbull at plus 140. Dan Ige, minus 170. Dan Ige, number 11th ranked featherweight, coming in. 33 years old from Hawaii. He also fights out of Extreme Couture now. So how about that? Zaluber and Ige, buddies on the main card. 7 KOs and 5 subs give him 12 of 19 wins by finish. And of his 9 defeats, he has never once been finished. Rarely even in opportunities where he gets finished, too, by dad. Dude is a tough, tough fighter. 11-8 record in the UFC. He's looking to keep the momentum rolling when he takes on Pitbull here. But Ige, you know, dude has just been a warrior. At one point was on a 7-fight winning streak before losing a decision to Calvin Kattar, and just notoriously, since going on that winning streak with wins over Kevin Aguilera, Mirsad Bektic, and Edson Barbosa, he is just notorious for beating anyone unranked and then losing to ranked opponents. So Let me tell you, 22-second knockout of Gavin Tucker, then decision loss in a main event to Chan Sung Jung, decision loss to Josh Emmett, and a decision loss to Mosvaravov. Then knocks out Damon Jackson. Then beats Nate Landry in a great fight. Then loses to Bryce Mitchell. Then knocks out Andre Feely. Then loses a decision to Diego Lopez, who he fought on 4 hours' notice. Fought Leon Murphy at UFC 308 in October, who he actually knocked him down in round number one before losing the final two. Then most recently fought at UFC 314, where he was down two rounds to Sean Woodson and knocked him out a minute into round number three. Danny Ige, you bloody legend. He wants to fight for the BMF belt one day. Man, I love this guy. His opponent, Patricio Pitbull, back after his defeat at UFC 314 in April to Yair Rodriguez, where he just never woke up. Never woke up, decided to just not do anything. And at 38 years old, you know, he has 12 knockouts and 12 subs. So 24 out of 36 wins, you know, they're good. They're fun. Of his 8 losses, he's been finished 3 times. This dude actually went 24-6 in Bellator. That was where he was most famous. But out of his last 4 fights, he is 1-3. He's coming off a loss. And against Yair Rodriguez, you know, I do think the height advantage played into it. The height, the reach, all of that, but I saw nothing from Pitbull to make me want to pick him here at all. So, I mean, I do think this is a much more favorable fight for Patricio Pitbull, but I gotta ride with my boy Danny Ige. Gotta ride with Danny Ige. I would rather be wrong and Pitbull win here than me go against my boy Danny Ige. Ain't no way I'm doing that here. Give me Dan Ige by decision, and dare I even say maybe a shocking round 3 knockout again. That would have me going ballistic. Next up, welterweight division as the now 13th ranked Kevin Holland. That's right, Kevin Holland is now 13 in the men's welterweight division. The Trailblazer takes on Daniel D. Rod Rodriguez. A fight 3 years in the making, some will say. These two were originally supposed to fight at UFC 279 before shuffling around happened, and Kevin Holland took on Hamzat Chimaev, and Daniel Rodriguez took on Li Jingliang. Crazy how things work out, but finally, we're getting this fight now, and Kevin's coming in -410, D-Rod +315. Kevin's a massive favorite here. Holland is 28-13 with 1 no contest. D-Rod is 19-5. 2 inches in height for Kevin, 6'3 to 6'1, and a whopping 7 inches in reach, 81 to 74. Wow. Orthodox stands for Kevin Southpaw for D-Rod. The ranked Kevin Holland, 32 years old from Fort Worth, Texas. Actually, I think he grew up in California, too, but fights out of the Travis Litter BJJ gym. 23 finishes, 13 knockouts, and 10 subs. Yeah, 23 of 28 wins by finish. Dude is an absolute animal. Of his 13 defeats, he's only been finished 6 times, and he does boast a 15-10 record in the UFC. Currently 2-1 in 2025. Dude has been speed runner of the year, and he's riding a 2-fight winning streak, both of them performance bonuses. Wins over Garner Nelson, and most recently Anaconda choke to Vicente Luque. That kind of put everyone on notice. Last few losses, just want to throw the names out there for you guys. All of Kevin Holland's losses since 2022. Gonna throw this out there. Khamzat Chimaev, Wonderboy Thompson in a fight of the night. Jack Della Maddalena by split decision, who he outstruck. MVP in his debut. Roman Dolidze, where he got injured after round one. Rainer De Ritter. Yeah, Kevin Holland does not lose to bums. And by the way, all of his wins, Vicente Luque, Gunnar Nelson, Michael Okejasek, Michael Chiesa, Santiago Pomzibio, Tim Means, Alex Oliveira. He'll beat any unranked welterweight. Now he has made it his gimmick. He's like, I only want unranked welterweights. He doesn't want to fight ranked people. No, no, no. He wants to fight unranked guys. And he's getting Diego Rodriguez right here. I absolutely love it. Kevin Holland, you bloody legend. So excited to see him get back in the octagon. D-Rod, you know, he's on a nice little run, too. D-Rod's 38 years old from California. 13 wins of his 19 have came by finish. 9 KOs, 4 subs. Of his 5 defeats, only ever been finished 2 times. He has a 9-4 record in the UFC. D-Rod coming off a win over Santiago Ponzinibbio in May. Knocked him out in round number 3. And before that, won a split decision over Alex Morano in October. So he is also on a 2-fight winning streak. His last 3 losses, and the only 2 guys to finish him, Neil Magny, Ima Chowgiri, and Kelvin Gastelum. So, similar scenario, has only lost to top-level guys. And before actually fighting Neil Magny, I mean, this dude was sitting with a very pretty 7-1 record in the UFC. Only loss was to Nicholas Dalby. Good stuff. Really good stuff from D-Rod. I could sugarcoat it. I could go over everything. You know, he has some good names on his record. Mike Perry, Kevin Lee, Li Jingliang, all wins. But, he's not beating Kevin Holland. You are not beating Kevin Holland. Kevin Holland is the king of the unranked welterweights. That's his championship, and he's not losing it to D-Rod. I don't know how he's going to beat him. I could see knockout. I could see a submission. I see maybe D-Rock getting rocked, falling backwards, and Kevin Holland laying on him, locking on submission, or even shooting a takedown, failing, and Kevin Holland locks in a submission. But we are riding with Kevin Holland all freaking day. And we've been nailing Kevin Holland predictions so far this year, so happy to see it. Getting into our co-main event. Should it be the co-main event? I don't know. It all depends if it delivers, but the number 13th ranked Paulo Costa takes on the number 14th ranked Roman Kopilov in the co-main event of an official pay-per-view. Paulo the Eraser Costa 14-4, Roman Kopilov 14-3, 6'1 to 6'1 inch in height for Paulo, 3 inches in reach for Roman, 75 to 72, southpaw stance for Kopilov, Costa with the orthodox. Minus 245 for Kopilov, plus 200 for Paulo Costa. Wow. That was all I have to say. Paulo Costa, the pullout king, some may say. This dude has so many fight cancellations. It's actually insane. He has 8 cancellations. 8 cancellations in the UFC. Unreal. Paulo Costa, 34 years old from Brazil. 12 of his 14 wins by finish, 11 KOs, and 1 sub. These two are actually supposed to fight on UFC 317, but Paulo Costa pulled out. Well, shocker. Shocker. Been on a not-so-good run. You know, Paulo Costa at one point in his career was 13-0. Had just beaten Riel Romero in one of the greatest fights I've ever seen. Came into the UFC and got four straight, knockouts, including ones over Johnny Hendricks and Uriah Hall. Then, one of the biggest humblings in UFC history is a loss to Tonga, knocks him out in round number 2. Would then go sit out a full year, come back against Marvin Vettori, lose in a performance of the night for Marvin Vettori. Then, wait out another year, would fight Luke Rockhold. Would then sit out a year and over a half before fighting Robert Whittaker at UFC 298. By the way, fight of the night was fantastic. Lost. We'll then come back in June of 2024 and put on one of the most boring fights I've ever seen. It's up there. It is up there for being one of the most boring fights I've ever seen. Somehow, 182 cinnamon strikes for Sean Strickland, 158 cinnamon strikes for Paulo Costa resulted in one of the worst fights I've ever seen. Just ridiculous. Just utterly ridiculous. And Paulo's coming back now. 1-4 record, 2-fight losing streak. Doesn't even hold a win over someone actively on the UFC's roster. Man. It's tough. And then, you know, I do like to bring up Paulo Costa's only losses in the company are to the number 2, the number 4, the number 5, and the number 10 guy. So that does say kind of something. But Paulo's going to need to get a big win here if he wants to stay relevant as he takes on the Russian boy, Roman Kopilov. 34 years old from Russia. 12 of his 14 wins coming by knockout. Of his 3 defeats, he's been submitted in 2 of them. And he is 6-1. In his last 7 fights, he's on a great run so far. Kopilov came into the UFC in 2019, lost the decision, would then be inactive for 2 years, lose a decision when he came back, but then knock out Alessio De Chirco, knock out Punelli Soriano, knock out Claudio Ribeiro, knock out Josh Rem, before running into Anthony Hernandez in February of 2024, where he would get submitted. He would sit out until June, where he would beat Cesar Almeida in a split decision, which just, I have no idea how he did finish him. Took him down, knocked him down, but just couldn't get it done. Came back January against Chris Curtis, fight of the night, knocks him out with a minute left with a head kick. Yeah, Roman Kopilov coming for his head. And I really think this is a plausible win for Paulo Costa, I really do. But the only area I have seen Roman Kopilov struggle in is the grappling. Other than that, he's been able to stand with Cesar Almeida, be able to stand with a lot of other tough, tough strikers. And Paulo Costa just hasn't been bringing it as of late. And the Sean Strickland fight was just embarrassing. So we are going to pick Roman Kopilov. But there's a lot of fights on here. Like Paulo Costa, maybe this is just one of those fights where it's like Paulo Costa's back and he just needed to fight someone unranked in Roman Kopilov, if you will, to finally get back in the win column. But I'm going to stick with Roman Kopilov. I've liked what I've seen from him much more. He's been more active, and he's honestly been more exciting than Paulo Costa. So Roman Kopilov over Paulo Costa, dare I say round 2 knockout? Dare I throw that out there into the world? I don't know, but I would really love for there to be a knockout here, whether Paulo's getting one, whether Roman's getting one. I just want to see a knockout. Now, ladies and gentlemen, with that, I can't believe we're here. I can't believe we're here. What if I were to tell you guys 50-ish minutes, 48 minutes or something later, we're finally here. Minus 120 Max Holloway, minus 100 Dustin Poirier. Literally no one can choose a favorite in this one. There is no underdog. There are only favorites. Max plus Holloway, Dustin the Diamond Poirier in the main event. Dustin Poirier's retirement fight for, might I add you, the BMF championship, the baddest mother effer championship. Max Holloway, 26-8. Dustin Poirier, 30-9 with one no contest. 5'11 to 5'9, 2 inches in height for Max Holloway, 3 inches in reach for Diamond, 72-69. Southpaw with that left for Dustin, orthodox with the right for the blessed man, Max Holloway. And get this, guys, both men right now are 22-8 in the UFC. Is that not insane? Is that the most insane stat ever? Both these guys have 22 wins and 8 losses in the UFC. I don't even know how that's possible. I really don't, but I absolutely love that. I just feel like these two guys' careers are intertwined, and it's so fitting that this is the retirement fight for Dustin Poirier. Dustin, the number 6 ranked lightweight. Max Holloway is ranked at number 5. The winner. Well, I don't even know what's going to happen to the winner. No one even knows what's going to happen to the winner, but if it's Max Holloway, he probably has a big fight coming up later in the year. And as for Dustin Poirier, yeah, to end your career on a win against one of your best rivals would be legendary. Let's start with Max. You know, we love Max Holloway. We've covered a lot of Max Holloway fights. 33 years old now from Hawaii. 14 of his 26 wins are by finish. 12 KOs and 2 subs. He's known for his striking. The submissions were in the early days. He's only ever been finished twice. You know, most recently in October, lost to Ito Puregang, knocked out in round 3. He was actually dropped for the first time in his career and knocked out for the first time in his career. You know, the other time that he has been finished, which was by submission, his debut in 2012 to Dustin Poirier. Crazy, just absolutely crazy. The career of Max Holloway has been awesome. Following the Dustin Poirier fight, would go 3-2 in the company, losing to Conor McGregor along the way, and then would put together just a 12-fight winning streak. It was utterly insane, and that 12-fight winning streak, which, by the way, had 4 different title defenses, would come to an end when he fought for the lightweight championship, interim lightweight championship, I should say, against Dustin Poirier. And Dustin Poirier would beat him in one of the best, if not the best, fights of 2019. Now, a lot of people thought that Max Holloway would have won that fight. It was unanimous. It was 49-46, 49-46, 49-46, all going to Dustin the Diamond Poirier. That's right, Max Holloway was only given one of those rounds, but it was a close fight. Following that, he would defend his belt again before running into what some may call his biggest kryptonite ever, Alexander Volkanovski. He would lose 3 times to Volkanovski in 3 years. Along the way, he would have 2 fight of the nights against Calvin Kattar and Yair Rodriguez. And then, following his 3rd defeat to Volk, would beat Arnold Allen, Chan Sung Jung, and most recently, UFC 300 was his last win against Justin Gaethje. Now, a fun fact I do want to say about the BMF belt. It's never been successfully defended. Every fight has ended in a knockout. In every single fight. Yeah, it's been incredible. Nate Diaz, Jorge Masvidal, Jorge finishes him in round number 3. Then Jorge vacates the belt. You then have Dustin Poirier and Justin Gaethje revive it. Dustin Poirier gets knocked out by Justin Gaethje. Then Gaethje gets knocked out by Holloway. Are we going to see this little triangle here of now Dustin Poirier knocking out Max Holloway? We'll have to see, but Max is coming off a loss. First time he's been knocked out in his career. And it was, you know, but it's the Ito Pura, though. Let's not act like it is the day. It's the Ito Pura. But dude is an absolute legend. He's made millions. He's one of the biggest stars in the company. Max blessed Holloway. His opponent, and I can't believe it, this is the last time we're covering Dustin Poirier. Guys, I want you to know that there's some lore with Dustin Poirier here. I used to not like him. You know, I used to not like him, you know. I had him picked to beat Khabib, and then when he fought Dan Hooker, I was a Dan Hooker guy. And I picked Dan Hooker to win. And then he fought McGregor. I was a McGregor guy. I picked McGregor to win. And then he fought Oliveira. I was an Oliveira guy. I, of course, picked Charles, you know. Then Chandler. I picked Chandler. Gaethje. I obviously picked Gaethje. Benoit Saint-Denis. I loved BSD. But that all changed when he fought for the belt against Islam. And I just felt this new love for Dustin Poirier. And I picked him to win. And he gave Islam Makhachev the toughest fight he's had. The fight he put on against Islam Makhachev was 10 times tougher than the Volk one. I'm going to say that right now. He pushed Islam to the limits he's never been pushed to before. But the Diamond, 36 years old, getting to retire on a pay-per-view in the main event against his good rival friend, Max Holloway. He is from Louisiana. That is right. In Louisiana, where it all started, is where it all ends. 16 KOs and 7 subs give him 23 of 30 wins by finish. And of his 9 defeats, he has been finished 7 times, 4 of which, I believe, are by knockout. And this is, of course, his retirement fight. The Diamond debuted in 2010 in the UFC, fighting in WEC. He would lose a fight to Danny Castillo before going on a 5-fight winning streak, including submitting Max Holloway. He would then have his first main event, taking on Chan Sung Jung, getting submitted with a Darce choke in a fight of the night in round number 4. After that, would get a darts choke of his own against Jonathan Brooks, then would lose a decision to Cub Swanson. Following that, he would go 7-1 in his next eight, his only loss to Conor McGregor. Including some wins would be Yancy Medeiros, Diego Pereira, and Bobby King Green. Then in 2016, he would somehow get knocked out by none other than Michael Johnson in 95 seconds. After that, he would lose to Jim Miller. Actually, he would beat Jim Miller in a fight of the night. How about that? I didn't even know that. He would have no contest against Eddie Alvarez before going on a four-fight winning streak with a fight of the night against Anthony Pettis, a fight of the night against Justin Gaethje, a performance of the night against Eddie Alvarez, and a fight of the night against Max Holloway. He would then become the closest man to submitting Khabib Nurmagomedov, dare I even say finishing Khabib Nurmagomedov, with a guillotine in round number three. Now, it would prove to be his downfall, unfortunately, but man, did he try. Mandy tried. Jump the ghillie. What if Dustin Poirier gets a ghillie on Max Holloway? I think I might have to pick that. I kid you not. But yeah, Poirier, his fight against Khabib was awesome. He would then have the greatest apex fight to date against Dan Hooker. It is one of the best fights I've ever seen. He would knock out Conor McGregor not once, but twice. Fight for the belt a third time against Charles Oliveira. Would have success in round one before getting dominated in round two, finished in round three. Have a fight of the night against Michael Chandler, whom he finished in round number three after almost being finished in rounds one and two. Would then lose to Justin Gaethje by knockout. Would then knock out Benoit Saint-Denis at UFC 299. His last win in a fight of the night. And then, of course, lost a fight of the night to Islam Makhachev at UFC 302. And that is the last time we're going to cover the career of Dustin Poirier. Man, what a run has it been. Let me just tell you guys, this is just different versions of these fighters. They fought each other early in their career, the prime of the career, and now they're fighting each other at the end of their career, at least in the case of Dustin Poirier. Now, I do think Max Holloway is near the end. Max has about 3 years left, maybe. You know, he still wants to fight for a belt here or there, but Diamond, he's not fighting for any more belts. You know, if he loses, he's for sure done. If he wins, people are going to say, oh, let's give him one more shot. But I think, you know, he knows he needs to hang it up. So it all comes down, which we've all been waiting for. What is my main event prediction? And I'm going to be honest. I don't know how. I don't know by decision. I don't know by knockout. I don't know if it's by a miracle guillotine. But I gotta ride with Dustin Poirier, boys. I have got to ride with Dustin Poirier. I love him, man. I love Diamond Poirier. I don't know what it was. It took me until his final two. He actually got me into UFC. I want you to know that. His fight against Khabib got me into UFC. And then I never rode with him. He fought Islam Makhachev. I rode with him, okay? And by the way, I'm an Islam guy. I'm an Islam Makhachev fan. And now, his final fight, we gotta ride with Dustin Poirier. And yeah, I could see these two throwing down five rounds, it being a war. I could see Dustin maybe getting like a round three knockout. Wouldn't that be legendary? Or dare I say a round five guillotine choke in a fight he's losing? I think Dustin Poirier would be the one to give us a cinematic finish to his career. So, very excited to be watching this fight. Oh, man. That's crazy. The end of the career of Dustin Poirier will conclude UFC 318. That's all we got, folks. That's all we got. That is your official UFC 318 preview and predictions episode. Wow, we deliver. I tell you, almost an hour of us rambling on about this. But yeah, that's all we got for this week, ladies and gentlemen. You're getting this episode early. How about that? Wednesday morning, bright and early. Actually, you know what? I might drop this Tuesday. I'm dropping this Tuesday because I'm actually going camping, funny enough, with two of my buddies. So, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, that's all we got on today's episode. Some updates to the rankings, a banger pay-per-view card. Don't let any of the casuals fool you. This is a good one for the hardcores. And you know what? Next week, we're back. We got Abu Dhabi to talk about. We got so much new stuff to talk about. The future looks bright. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I send you off. Have an amazing week. Have an amazing life. Make this the best month of the rest of your life. Make this the best year. Live your best life. And as always, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.